Welcome to the WWE Podcast. We're going to get your Monday Night Raw review rolling in just a minute, including thoughts on the final go-home show to Backlash that airs this Sunday on the WWE Network, including the peep show with Edge and eventually Orton interrupting and the whole reverse psychology on Christian getting Edge fired up. If Charlotte is indeed the now true face of WWE, even after dropping the NXT championship. And I examine if there is any possibility that Nia Jax and or Bobby Lashley win their respective championship matches on Sunday. So let's get everything started right after this. More to See merch is out now. Order yours today with free shipping on all orders. The link is found in the description of this episode. Everybody, also, please follow her on Instagram. It's Sarah Edwards Made 10. That's Sarah, S-A-R-A, Edwards Made 10. Again, head on over to More to See. That's M-O-R, the number 2, S-E-E. The merch is out now. And again, the link is going to be in the description of this episode. Hey, so if you guys are looking for a podcasting network and platform that's easy to use, has a huge listener base, extremely reasonably priced, and just flat out fun to use, head on over to Podbean. And guys, Podbean, if you haven't heard of it, is one of the fastest growing podcast platforms right now, period. So whether you're just starting and they have absolutely free options, or you're a seasoned pro, this will meet your needs because they offer monetization and distribution, as well as your own podcast website, unlimited hosting, tons of other things, guys. It's really easy to use. Head on over to podbean.com.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Because Stone Cold said so.
Hey everybody, welcome to the WWE Podcast. It is June 9th, 2020. Man, we're rocketing through June, aren't we? Already. Almost 10 days in, almost a third of the way through June already. It seems to be the fastest month, in at least in my mind, of the entire year. I don't know why, but June always seems to just scream by. And this year is proving no difference as we are a third of the way through June. That means we are a week away, roughly, from Backlash this Sunday on the WWE Network. And we've got a lot to talk about in regards to the pay-per-view with Monday Night Raw, the go-home show happening last night from, you guessed it, Orlando, Florida. I wonder how long we're going to say that. You know, I wonder how long we're going to continue to say Orlando, Florida Performance Center. I will say as an overall thought that Raw has improved in quality over the last several weeks to months. I think they've settled into their role nicely and adjusted nicely to the new normal, as we all like to call it now. So I've enjoyed Raw as a whole. And really, to be honest, last night I enjoyed Raw more than I thought I would. And that's been a common theme for me over the last several weeks, where I set the bar so low going into Raw that when it exceeds my expectations, I'm surprised. But I don't know if I should be. And maybe I'm should adjust my expectations so that it meets with reality a little bit better and more accurately and more consistently. But Monday Night Raw, again, I think it did a very serviceable job getting us ready for the Backlash pay-per-view. That's ultimately what the goal was and should have been, is to get the audience ready, get the audience pumped and motivated and excited for the Backlash pay-per-view. And I would say mission accomplished, mostly. And we'll get to that, as I always do. But first, thank you everybody for taking the time out of your day or night to listen to my voice, because without you, this show does not exist at all. Well, it would, but it'd be a pretty sad state of affairs with just myself listening. So thank you, everybody, for taking the time to download, subscribe, whatever it may be, whenever you support the show, whether it's through patreon.com/WWE podcast for a completely ad-free listening experience, or it's just a quick rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It is noticed, and I thank you so much. For those wondering, my Twitter account is still down and out. I haven't kicked out yet of the suspension from Twitter. Those that don't know why I was suspended, well, I don't either. So I'll just continue to update you on that. It is very frustrating for me not being able to communicate with you guys. There have been so many times I just want to say something, and I'm watching wrestling, and my knee-jerk reaction, my muscle memory goes, ooh, I want to tweet this or say this. And then I sadly go to my phone and say, oh, yeah, that's right. I can't. So I am just kind of sitting here, as I always say, and just twiddling my thumbs, and I filed an appeal. We'll see, right? So I'll keep you updated on that front. But you can still email me at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to get in touch with the show. And trust me, I can't wait to be back on Twitter and being able to communicate with all of you guys. I miss the hell out of it. It's a tough time to be away from Twitter, and hopefully it comes back soon. So, but on that front, you can also head on over to the website. That thing still works at wwepodcast.com and Patreon, as I mentioned. So let's jump into Monday Night Raw, because as I said at the open, I thought it was a good to very good show as a whole. Now, there were certainly the low spots. We all know what those were. At least one of them being the just head-scratching, embarrassing, eye-rolling decathlon that was done by WWE production team, who thinks that they just have basically a unlimited hall pass to go ahead and use their production skills to distance himself from being a wrestling company. And since most of the fans, unbelievably, had a positive outlook on the Firefly Funhouse and the Boneyard match and the absolute worst thing I've ever seen in the history of professional wrestling, the Money in the Bank ladder matches, they now feel that they have an unlimited hall pass to just kind of do what they want. And certainly they are showing that on a weekly basis now with their just insane production of the Viking Raiders and the Street Profits. So we'll get to that in a little bit later as well. But, you know, I want to start with something positive, because I think we need some positivity today, right? We need something to distract us from just the insanity of what's going on in the world. And to be frank, I don't think we've ever been more divided in our lives in the history of America. Other than the Civil War, I don't think that as a country we've been more divided ever. So I'm going to sprinkle a little bit of positivity your way, and I guess to steal a line from the New Day, the power of positivity here. And so let's get into something I liked about Raw last night. And that would be the Asuka Charlotte match that ended the show. You know, I had forgotten just how good these two are together. The chemistry that they have is very well pronounced. And I really enjoyed the match they had. You talk about physical. I mean, you talk about the physicality in that match. Some of the knee strikes were brutal at best. And that's a compliment, right? I'm not meaning that as sloppy. There wasn't really anything sloppy about this match. And when we watched Charlotte go for the spear, and we had Asuka stand up and deliver the knee to Charlotte's face, that was downright brutal. I mean, that was, you talk about these guys being professionals, you talk about them protecting themselves and trying to be safe, and I believe that they were, but that was rough to see. I mean, you can't fake something like that. And she just missed Charlotte's nose, of which Charlotte tends to make a habit of bloodying her mouth or her nose on a matchly basis. I mean, seriously, it seems as if almost every match Charlotte's in, more often than not, Charlotte has some kind of blood spewing from her mouth or her nose. I don't know what it is, but it's kind of a Charlotte's gimmick to bloody her mouth every match. But we actually didn't get that here. I don't know how, but it was physical. Man, it was physical. And two very physical styles, two women that work very well together, and we haven't seen them really match up one-on-one in quite some time. It was a great, great match. And yes, we had the predictable ending, and I was a little bit turned off knowing when this match started that we were going to see Nia Jax interfere, because really, when you look at this, neither woman could afford to lose. You can't have Asuka lose to Charlotte clean when Asuka is defending her belt against Nia Jax on Sunday, not Charlotte Flair. So had Charlotte Flair won, wouldn't she have a claim to stake that she should get a shot at the Women's Championship? Well, yes, she does. And she still got her win, so they're going to use that as the next challenger in line for Asuka. I don't see how in the hell Nia Jax wins the Women's Championship on Sunday. Tell me, somebody tell me how. How does Nia Jax win this? Does anybody really want to see Nia Jax as Women's Champion? Anybody? I think I do eventually. I just don't think that she particularly has a deep character right now, and not really a fault of her own. I guess creative thinks that her size alone is enough of a story to tell. I beg to differ. I think we need to see and hear from her more. And particularly if they're going to eventually put the belt on her, I want to know what she is, who she is, not just this, okay, I'm bigger than the rest of the women's division. That's a story that's told regardless of who in the ring that she's with. The fact that we don't have more of her individually as a character is what's concerning. But I think this is all a moot point because I don't believe for a single second that Asuka's dropping the belt on Sunday. And I think they made that abundantly clear too on Monday that since Charlotte is now back on Raw full time and she's dropped the NXT championship, and we'll get to that in a minute too, that they've signaled that now that Charlotte has a win over the women's champion, after Asuka comes out next week proclaiming her victory, Charlotte could interrupt saying, I pinned you last week. That makes me the number one contender. I mean, they've set themselves up going forward. That's ultimately what this was about. And it makes sense. It makes sense. And I really don't expect a insane match on Sunday with Nia Jax and Asuka. I just don't expect it to be a 5-star classic. But you put Asuka and Charlotte in the ring, I think there's a much better chance of that. It's simple physics, folks. Okay, those of you, you're calling Nia Jax too big. No. I mean, I'm sure there's people out there that are offended by this. The fact of the matter is Nia Jax is a big woman. There's no slicing it any other way. She's probably bigger than heavier than most men. Okay? That's just a fact of life. That's just science. It's just what it is. And the thing is, I'm not saying that's a liability on her. I think that's a complete asset. It's 100% of it, a big asset for Nia Jax to differentiate herself from the rest of the division. She doesn't blend in. She is very definable. She's very distinguishable among the rest of the women's division. That's a positive. And you also have always that story of Nia Jax's size, but you got to be careful because she's a woman. You can't talk about her weight or size. So it's hard as a woman being bigger in your division to have the announcers tell the story and tell the narrative that, hey, you know, Nia Jax is her opponent's, you know, facing a 100-pound weight deficit or weight disadvantage. You can't do that. You can't talk about pounds with women. That's why when the women are introduced, you don't mention how much they weigh. I mean, when you think about how silly it is, how silly is that? In 2020, we can't mention women's weight if they're professional performers coming to the ring. I mean, so you're kind of handicapping yourself by not being able to tell that story, aren't you? Yeah, I think you are. So anyway, my point is Charlotte seems to be up next. And as I put in the title of this episode, is Charlotte the new face of WWE? I would say right now she is. How many times have we seen Charlotte on our TV screens over the last few weeks, months even? Since Charlotte won that NXT title, I thought at that time she was just going to go and hide in NXT, elevate the women's division, elevate the belt, take the whole, everything just will rise with the tide of Charlotte. And they seem to have cut this short. They seem to have cut the legs off of this really quickly. And yes, if you saw NXT TakeOver, Charlotte wasn't the one being pinned. It was Rhea Ripley from Io Shirai doing a moonsault after Ripley had already taken the figure eight. So Charlotte can claim that she never lost. I don't think she'll go with the automatic rematch clause because that's not a thing anymore. I think that she is now officially done with NXT for the time being. And, you know, you seem to have cut this short. And I think the logic is, hey, Becky Lynch is gone. We need a big star to replace her. We need somebody to fill that gap that is now gone from the women's division in a big way. In a big, big way. And apparently, Becky is due in December. So, if you do the math, by the way, that means that she probably competed during her pregnancy. Unknowingly competed during her pregnancy. So, I would assume nothing has happened and she's fine. But do the math, folks. Right? Do the math. That would put you at some time in March that they conceived. And then you move forward from there, obviously. So just a little food for thought there. Am I the only one, by the way? When somebody tells you when they're due, you have a friend, family, whatever. The first thing you think about is, okay, so when did they do it? Right? You subtract 9 months and you're like, what was I doing in that? What was I doing in the middle of February, right? Ugh. Anyway, so Charlotte now seems to be the shoe-in or the emergency. It's like, in case of emergency, break glass. That's what Charlotte seems to be. That move of Charlotte dropping the belt seems to be of having her come back to Raw full time. And I get it. I get it. A big hole has been made from Becky Lynch leaving and going on maternity leave and probably not being back for at least a year, maybe more. And then that's a year from now. Right. So she's going to want time with her baby. Seth's probably going to take time off around the holidays for her, his son or daughter. Is it daughter? I don't know. I didn't get the gender. But the fact is, Becky is going to be gone for a while. Seth will probably be gone for a month or two. But with that being said, Charlotte needs to step up, and they seem to be putting all of the effort behind Charlotte right now. All of the focus has been around Charlotte, even beyond before this. Charlotte was on SmackDown. She's been on Raw. She's been on NXT. Everywhere you look, she's in the first segment and she's in the last segment. It's exhausting seeing Charlotte so much. So it's at least a good thing that the NXT belt is off of her so that I only have to see her on one show. I mean, it's not that I don't enjoy her work or her character. It's a little bit one-dimensional, but at least she's on one show so I can appreciate seeing her on just one show and she's exclusive to that brand. That's a good thing. As far as the NXT belt goes, the NXT Women's Championship and the rest of the women's division on NXT, I think they kind of got shortchanged here. You can say what you want about Charlotte. You can say that, oh, NXT didn't need her. The fact of the matter is she's the biggest star when she's on NXT. Case closed. And when you have big stars on your program, guess what they do? They elevate the rest of the roster. So say what you want about Charlotte. Is she overexposed? Yeah, she is. Does WWE seem to put the rocket ship behind her blatantly, transparently? Well, even when they don't, a lot of times we think that they probably shouldn't. Yes. But Charlotte is still the biggest star that NXT had at that time, I would argue. Even bigger than Adam Cole. Okay, bigger than Finn Balor. I don't think that it's really an argument to be made because she has crossed into, she came from NXT, main evented WrestleMania. Is anybody from NXT main evented WrestleMania? No, the answer is no. Charlotte is the biggest star. So my point is, I think that the women's division got shortchanged. And you would say, I guarantee you would have people in the women's division at NXT say, we didn't really need her, we were doing fine without her. Nonsense. Okay. You were doing good without her, but it's like having Stone Cold Steve Austin. I mean, again, this is a bit of a stretch with the analogy because Austin was the best of all time, in my opinion. But having Stone Cold Steve Austin come back to compete and grab the championship, how does it not make it more valuable? It does. The answer is it does. So having Charlotte come back to NXT and help the women's division, I think they got shortchanged probably by a good 4 months. I think she was destined to be with that NXT championship for many more months. So I do kind of feel for the brand a little bit because she had a lot of good matchups that she could have had that she hasn't, you know, hasn't already had on Raw, right? She's pretty much battled them all. But Vince saw fit to say, hey, no, we're taking the belt off of Charlotte. The bigger cause here, the bigger picture is star power on Raw in the women's division. And apparently she didn't think that, Vince didn't think that Asuka, Nia Jax, Kairi Sane, the Iconics are enough for the Raw women's division. I mean, the thing is, you also have Shayna Baszler. You have Natalya. You have the floating Raw women's tag team champions in Bayley and Sasha. I mean, WWE is really trying to elevate, or at least the perception of elevating Raw with the women's division to have big stars. And apparently Vince thought that the bigger cause was Monday Night Raw. Honestly, I thought that Charlotte should probably have stayed in NXT. Why? Because this is how you build new stars. This was an opportunity to build new stars, and sure, they could still go that road, but instead of maybe doing things the old way and taking the take-your-time approach, Vince went with, again, emergency, break glass. That's exactly what they did with Charlotte, and it's not even an emergency, but Vince clearly saw it was, but I really think that it was an opportunity for maybe calling up women to Monday Night Raw and letting them see what they have, letting them take the spotlight, letting new stars emerge. Instead, it's kind of the same old, right? The usual suspects of Charlotte back on Raw. Who has she not faced that's on the roster that you would go, ooh, I can't wait till she faces this person on Raw? I didn't say any other brand. I said Raw. The answer is nobody. Charlotte has really faced them all. To me, there are more available women in NXT that she could have had better matches with, help elevate those stars so that when they're ready, they can come up to Raw and SmackDown. And I say coming up, it is still a call-up. You know, I kind of backtracked on my original thoughts that, oh, it's not really a call-up, they're a third brand. They are a third brand. But I should, and I think WWE should still label it as a call-up, because the fact is, ratings are bigger on Raw. Ratings are bigger on SmackDown. The pay-per-views that generate the most buzz, the most revenue and have the biggest stars on them are from the Raw and SmackDown rosters. So to me, it's still a call-up until NXT continuously beats Raw and SmackDown in the ratings. And I know it's like a cannibalization of your own product, but I'm going to still call it a call-up until the numbers consistently tell me otherwise. So, okay, well, I think I went way more in-depth than I thought I would about the Charlotte deal. But the main event was good, way back to what I started with. I think the main event of Monday Night Raw was very good, and I think that, again, I think Asuka is almost guaranteed to retain at Backlash. Moving on to something that is a little bit suspect, and that's the Bobby Lashley and Drew McIntyre encounter. You know, we had MVP out there, and he's doing his usual VIP lounge. And he starts to talk about a guy that he doesn't say who it is, but he's talking about somebody with a devastating finisher, the greatest of all time, or whatever it may be. And Drew comes out and thanks him for introducing him. Obviously, he wasn't talking about Drew. And then tells MVP that he's going to count down and he's going to Claymore kick him. And if he doesn't, he's going to chase him down and beat the hell out of him and Claymore kick him anyway. Kind of a bully thing to do, right? I mean, that's not an endearing thing for Drew McIntyre to do. We've seen him Claymore kick MVP more times than I can count over the last few months. I'm kind of over it. I know that he's the manager slash kind of in-ring competitor hybrid of Bobby Lashley, also being the mouthpiece of Bobby. But he's picking a fight with a guy that's not picking a fight with him. And I don't feel nuclear heat for MVP. I think MVP is ultra talented, and he's showing you what he can do in his late career. And that's not just be an in-ring, serviceable in-ring competitor. I think his best money, or biggest money, is in his mouth. And that's a good thing, because that's where I think he soars, with especially with Bobby Lashley, who desperately needs a mouthpiece. So we have him threatening him, and he was going to do it. He counts to 3, 2, and then we have Bobby Lashley not attack Drew, and just kind of stare him down. I mean, that was a little bit suspect, at least in my mind. Weird. It didn't feel natural at all. It felt a little bit kind of rehearsed. Like, why would you not attack Drew McIntyre if you're the heel? Doesn't make sense. Because you're threatening to beat up the manager, the guy that's supporting and representing you, and you're not going to defend him. You're a heel. You're going to attack from behind. But they haven't really... I mean, I know that Bobby Lashley is the heel in this case, but is he really? I mean, he hasn't done anything really dastardly. Everything he does is up front. He's a machine. He is separating himself from Lana, who, I mean, at this point, everyone is kind of pushed to the curb and put a free sign on. And now you have him just not attacking Drew from behind when he had the opportunity to. It was just a little bit weird. I don't dislike Bobby Lashley from a, oh, I hate he's a good heel. He's only a heel because WWE says he is, and because he's with MVP, who plays a really good heel. So the fact is, I'm still looking forward to this match on Sunday. I'll give you my predictions in my prediction show coming up on Saturday with a co-host. And also, while I'm at it, the rest of the schedule for the week is NXT and AEW coming to you on Thursday. Tomorrow's Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm not sure what I'm going to do yet. I really don't know. I will figure that out as we go along. So usually, kind of, I have an epiphany during the day, usually. I try to sometimes do it week by week where I have things scheduled for the next few weeks. In this case, I don't have one. Next week will certainly be chapter four of the Undertaker Last Ride. I mean, I can't wait to see chapter four, particularly that they're going to cover Goldberg Undertaker. So that's the schedule. Also, your SmackDown review is coming to you from Brian and Jeff. They will be coming to you on Saturday with your friend and at SmackDown review. So, boy, we got a lot of audio content as always coming your way. And I'm excited to get this going because Backlash is shaping up to be, I think, a really good pay-per-view. So, all right, something else that I really liked as we continue this train of positivity is Rey Mysterio and Seth Rollins. Surprisingly, this program has legs, and we've just started walking and running with them. And clearly, it's showing us that Rey Mysterio and Seth Rollins is reserved for a pay-per-view beyond Backlash. And since Seth Rollins got on commentary and invited Rey and his son to Raw, with God almighty, great touch. I mean, Seth has really found himself here. I will say that. But he invited Rey and Dominic to Raw next week. And Rey says that he saw his doctor this morning and he doesn't want to make any promises, but the prognosis is that his eye is healing, as if there was any other option, because this is an angle. Makes sense. And he had a warning that Seth, I'm not going to wait till the end of the match to hit you with a 619. No, as soon as the bell rings, there's a 619 with the name Monday Night Messiah written all over it. Now, you know, I'm a bit torn on wrestlers saying the names of their own finishers. It's almost an unspoken thing that you don't name your own finish, right? You don't talk about hitting your own finish, especially the name of it. You just talk about generalities, right? You always just say that I'm going to, you know, crush your face in. I'm going to make you pay every, you know, I'm going to make my fists and your knuckles, I'm sorry, my knuckles and your face really good friends. I mean, there's silly ways that you can make analogies to make things seem a little bit more natural than naming your own finish. Because, number one, if Ray is giving away his game plan, which he just did to Seth Rollins, not smart, right? Not a smart thing to do. And I know I'm nitpicking here, and I said that this is positive, and it is. This rivalry as a whole is very positive. I'm just kind of a little bit knocking on the babyface strategy here, telling him what he's going to do. I mean, do you really want to hit him with a 619? Is that really the most devastating thing? You know, not a chair to the head. I know they don't do that anymore, but maybe a chair or doing the same thing that he did by jamming his eye into the corner of the steel steps. I mean, it's just kind of, I don't know, it's a little bit hokey to say that you're going to hit your finish on the person that did you harm right away. Well, that's stupid because, number one, it's not the most devastating thing you can do. Number two, is that really justice considering the magnitude of what he did? That's not an eye for an eye. That's like an eye for a hand slap. And number three, you're giving away your game plan. It's just stupid. Okay. And it's a little weird mentioning your own finish. Okay. But Mysterio says he's going to kick Seth's ass. Whew. I don't think that's ever been said in wrestling. And then Seth tries to calm down Mysterio as he says that he doesn't understand the power of his own words, saying you had the opportunity to walk away gracefully, a champion, a legend, and a hero, but you continue to spread this misinformation. Oh, God, it's just great stuff. Seth then talks about that, it says that he's a peaceful man, and he wants to personally invite him and his son Dominic to Raw next week, and he wants to show them the sacrifice they made was for the greater good. At that point, we had Aleister Black come in and attack Seth, get a few punches in, ultimately just to get to Humberto Carrillo and Aleister Black versus Murphy and Austin Theory. Good match, kind of short, but it was really a means to an end because, yes, we have Aleister Black and Humberto Carrillo win, but after the match, Rey Mysterio music, his music hits, and Seth comes out wearing Rey's mask. It gives the distraction to Austin Theory and Murphy, who attack from behind Humberto Carrillo and Aleister Black. They get beat down pretty bad, and really taking the worst of it is Aleister Black. And this is interesting to me because this also signals what and who Seth Rollins' opponent is next. After Rey Mysterio, I think there could be a really good Aleister Black-Seth Rollins program. You know, provided they actually give Aleister Black a voice and something to say beyond just his promos of sitting in the back asking people to knock on his door, there needs to be something said from Aleister Black. Please. There's not a whole lot of development character-wise going on for him. He's kind of in the Nia Jax boat, right? So Rollins ends up stomping Black's head into the mat after he gets beat down. It was very deja vu from last week. Very good. This continues to build heat on Seth as the kingpin of this unnamed group, not allowing people to get to him for too long, not allowing finishes to be hit on him, continuing to build heat, all positives. And it's something underutilized in today's professional wrestling of where WWE and other promotions just can't help themselves of building up heat. They're worried about pissing off their audience and getting them angry and not making them happy of seeing the bad guy lose. Well, guess what? Sometimes it's called a delayed satisfaction. I think there's a more scientific term for that. But sometimes there is that. You have to wait for what you want, and it's going to be worth more and feel better if you wait for it than if you just get it up front because it's like, oh, well, I've seen that. Yeah, that's cool, but you know, I've seen this before. So, all right, moving on to the Peep Show, and that was interesting because Christian came on and started telling Edge right away that he says, I don't think you can pull off the greatest wrestling match. He said, I don't think you can pull that off in your prime. Starting to poke the bear. And Edge says that he hasn't had a straight-up wrestling match in 9 years with no bells and whistles. And now it's being called the greatest wrestling match of all time. He said it's like being put at the bottom of Mount Everest with no gear, no crew, and told to climb it. He says that he isn't the same Edge that used to look in Christian's eyes, about to face Randy Orton, who's been here for the last 9 years. Edge says, I don't even know why or how many cylinders I have left under the hood, and Randy's firing on all of them. And Christian states that it's excuses and asked if he thought Edge would be just giving greatest hits and just giving a couple spears and smiling. Basically, he fires up Edge here. And at that time, you kind of see where Christian's going. He even said, Christian said, so let me tell you this, Adam. If you don't think you're going to win this, then step through those ropes, go home right now. And Edge just looks him in the eyes with those in. Edge has some of the best eyes in the business. My God, his eyes just tell a world of words. And that's when Christian said, that's what I was looking for. There's those eyes. Yes, exactly. His eyes are money. His eyes are money. We then get a Orton on the Jumbotron interruption saying he's going to throw up and that, yeah, the expectations on this match are astronomical. But what are you going to do when you don't live up to those expectations? I'm going to embarrass you. I'm going to take every ounce of passion, every ounce of grit, until you're a broken man and are sent back home to your wife and daughters. This was kind of a... It was good. It didn't, to me, light this whole thing on fire. This thing is already... I think it's hot enough. I think that they reached a boiling point before the whole pandemic happened when Edge was about to return to avenge his wife being RKO'd. To me, that was like the pinnacle of this whole thing. But... they've built this back up nicely. The addition of Christian adds another element to this of using kind of reverse psychology to basically fire Edge up to realize what he has to do and be to defeat Randy Orton and put on the greatest wrestling match of all time, which, guys, you know how much I despise the fact that WWE has put that slogan on this match for just a litany of reasons that are just absolutely ridiculous. But the fact that they're actually mentioning worrying about why Edge and Orton are even worried about making this the greatest wrestling match of all time, beyond the promotion just randomly putting that slogan on their match, I don't know why. They should be concerned about winning. Winning. That's what this is about. It should be about. And unfortunately, it's actually kind of being dual canoned here, where, yeah, I want to beat you, but what if I can't put on the greatest wrestling match? Well, then, I mean, I don't know what to tell you, because the greatest wrestling match is a subjective thing anyway. Nobody is going to unanimously say, this is the greatest wrestling match. It's a very, very subjective thing anyway. There's so many levels that this is just stupid that they call it the greatest wrestling match ever. And I won't even go down that road because you guys know how I feel. If you don't know how I feel, listen to really any one of my previous shows the last couple of weeks. Many, many, many rants. So, Edge just had a very nice reaction to this and says that after Orton said that this is going to be the redemption of Edge is going to be over. And Edge just stares at the screen intensely and says, no, it's not. Nice, simple, effective. It was a lot said in just those three words. So, all right. And yeah, then we get to the Viking Raiders and the Street Profits. And I kind of defecated on this a little bit at the top of the show. And I guess that's a nice pairing of words. I'm defecating on the decathlon. Does that really work? I don't know. But it was just, again, an embarrassment of programming. It's an embarrassment eye roll to watch. And I have no idea who thinks this is entertainment. I mean, again, I don't know if they're catering to the Saturday morning cartoon kids demographic. I'm not sure. I don't know who is laughing at this. I don't know. I mean, it's not putting a smile on my face, that's for sure. It's just putting, you know, kind of just a neutral reaction with an eye roll. I mean, if that's what they're going for. And it's just, It's just flat out dumb. Having grown men who are believed to be in WWE, who people say that all the time in their promos, that I dreamt of being here. This is where I was born to be, blah, blah, blah. And yet, if that was true, being paid millions of dollars or at least six figures in probably Street Profits and Viking Raiders' case, why are they being paid to have the camera crew follow them around for bowling and for basketball and for axe throwing? It's a damn embarrassment. It's an embarrassment and really a waste of talent for the Raw men's tag team division. And to be honest, the women's tag team division isn't much better with depth. I mean, you have, yes, you have a triple threat match for the women's tag team championships on Sunday, but that's pretty much the entire women's tag team division is the Iconics, or are the Iconics. The you have Sasha and Bayley, and then, of course, you have Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. So basically, you have the entire women's tag team division in a single match. And you can't even count Asuka and Kairi Sane. They seem to be on their own separate paths at this point. So it's sad when you have the entire women's tag team division in a single match. So think about this, too. Now, I'm probably missing a team. I'm probably missing a team that's on the main roster that is not getting a fair shake right now. But think about this, too, though. I mean, if there are only three women's tag teams right now, that means a third of the women's tag teams are champions in the division. Think about that. 33% of the women in the tag team division are champions. Ugh. I mean, you talk about belts that don't mean anything. At least they're around the waists of two extremely talented women who are eventually on a collision course with one another. Where that happens, when that happens, I don't know, but I'm okay with the long game. I'm okay with Bayley and Sasha being kind of simmered rather than broiled and turning up the heat just a little, back it off just a little. I mean, I'm cool with that. Let's wait and do this right. And that is the prescription that I'm on board with. So nonetheless, we have a triple threat women's tag team division match on Backlash. So yeah, LOL. LOL. So that was really Monday Night Raw in a nutshell. Oh, and then we had the Street Profits playing Clip Cup because we got to make sure we hit the college crowd that goes, "Ooh, I know that game. That's a fun game." And we're all supposed to relate to it, I guess. I'm not really sure. We had Kevin Owens, Andrade, and Angel Garza in a triple threat match. I mean, it was a good match, certainly longer than I thought it would be. We had Andrade win and exit the ring, and Owens is left basically stunned with his hands on his head. And wow, again, this is it's shocking to see where Kevin Owens has kind of fallen. I'm not really sure. It's a bit, yes, we had Owens hit the stunner on Garza, and Andrade slid in and covered Garza for the win. But it's just, it's weird that we have Kevin Owens kind of an afterthought on Raw. I'm not sure why, given that WWE is certainly not working with a full roster right now with the pandemic going on. Eventually, Roman Reigns will be back, and we'll deal with that when it happens on SmackDown. But, all right, anyway, we're going to have, let's see. Oh, the United States champion, Apollo Crews. So Apollo says, after we had clips shown last week where Crews declared he'd defend the title every week, and his hand-picked opponent last week was Kevin Owens. However, it was interrupted by Andrade, Zelina Vega, and Angel Garza. So Apollo then comes back and said he's so excited to defend his United States championship at Backlash, against the winner of the triple threat, Angel Garza, Andrade, and Kevin Owens. He's then interrupted by Andrade, who comes out, and the match is about to start. So let me get this straight. Andrade says, and they made it very clear and said multiple times, that he is excited to be able to defend the belt every single week. Well, you skip this week. So far, not so good. I know that it's for Backlash, but you said every week. So if it's every week, it's every week. Don't give me, well, they're going to fight for an opportunity at Sunday. Well, you said you were going to give it to anybody. So what if you come out and just lay down an open challenge? Then the winner of that match will face whoever wins your match. Either you defend it or you drop it. So I was a bit just like, I mean, the whole thing went up in smoke immediately. They couldn't even do things right for a week with what Apollo Crews said. So, I'm not a big fan of Apollo Crews from a character perspective. I think he's a bit overdone on the babyface smiley side of being just happy to be here and everything's so exciting. I don't know why it needs to be like that. Anyway, I'm probably reading into it a little bit too much, as I always do with most things. And here's a question. Here's a question for you guys. And I posed this with my co-host last week. Do you think that given the circumstances with all the Black Lives Matter movement, right, that WWE will hold their champions that are black longer than they normally would have if this wasn't going on? I think the answer is yes. I don't think that's racist to say. I think that's WWE's perspective to do that because they want to make sure that they aren't viewed in a way that could be negative for taking a championship off of a black athlete during the Black Lives Movement era. Who knows how long this is going to last. But, I mean, that's my perspective. We'll never know, ever. But that's my thought. You may see more black men and women on SmackDown and Raw get more opportunities, and I'm fine with that. No problem. Just keep an eye out for that. It's always interesting. My point is, the whole point of talking about this is to see how deep or how far real life politics can seep their way into a professional wrestling scripted world. Very interested to see how far that this can penetrate into the fake world of wrestling, or the scripted, predetermined world of wrestling. I shouldn't even use fake. Just keep an eye on that. Keep an eye on that. Okay. So this again, this greatest wrestling match ever, we had an opinion from Kurt Angle. And Kurt Angle begins by stating that Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels, Kurt Angle knows about competing in great wrestling matches and knows that sometimes all you got to do is step in the ring and with someone they can bring out the best and vice versa. Angle then implies that Randy Orton versus Edge is on par with Ricky Steamboat versus Ric Flair, Angle versus Lesnar, Undertaker versus HBK. I mean, this is insane. Angle then states that he truly feels Edge and Orton can rise to the occasion this Sunday at Backlash. Angle finishes his thought and states that he feels Edge will walk out of Backlash victorious. So 1 point for Edge here. This is, I mean, you're kidding me, right? Edge hasn't had a match in 9 years. What would make you believe that he can even put on a five plus star match with Randy Orton? Randy Orton is extremely good in the ring. He doesn't even have to try to be good, and he's good. We all know that. That was even brought up in a promo. But to put it against Angle, Lesnar, Undertaker, HBK, it's a joke. It's a joke. And this, again, why are we so concerned about the quality of the match? The quality of the match will speak for itself after it happens. You're speaking about something that shouldn't be spoken about. Those are things, five-star quality matches, history in the making matches, matches that you know are going to live in infamy. The quality of those matches are spoken about after it happens, not before. You know why they're not spoken about before? Because that exposes the business. Because now you're telling me that these competitors who are just trying to beat the hell out of each other and win are now more concerned about making sure they put on a great wrestling match than they are about beating one another. It's just absolutely garbage. It's garbage and it's laughable. It's absolutely, it's laughable that you have Kurt Angle coming out there trying to use his name brand value as some kind of credibility to the insane notion that Undertaker HBK is on the same level as Orton and Edge. I'm sorry. No, wrong. Go home. Ugh. All right. Well, so that's really my Monday Night Raw review, guys. I know there's some other small things that happened that I didn't cover, but I think, 80%, 90% of it. If there's something you guys want to talk about or get your voice on the show, again, hit me up at realwwepodcast@gmail.com until my Twitter is resurrected. That's where you can get a hold of me. Head on over to wwepodcast.com for all of the latest articles, latest podcasts, and much more. And head on over also for an ad-free experience at patreon.com/wwepodcast. So, all right, that's the show for today. But don't forget, tomorrow is Back to Nostalgia, and then two shows coming Thursday, two shows coming Saturday. So, wow, lots to go. We have five more shows to go for you guys this week. Super excited as we get to Backlash. And as far as Backlash goes, I would love to say I'll be able to live tweet with you throughout the show, but we all know how that's probably going to end up. And I'll be back probably next week. I'll let you know my schedule later in the week, but probably for a review show on Monday, and then Tuesday will be your Raw review. So maybe I'll pop in an extra show next week simply because it's a pay-per-view Sunday. So, alrighty. Well, guys, thanks so much for tuning in tonight. As always, if you like this show, give us a rating and review. If not, keep on listening, keep on downloading, and telling a friend. That really does help out, too. So, everybody, thanks so much. As always, I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show. Or head to WWEPodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWEPodcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.